this, the more I guess my thought is I'm not very enthusiastic about it. But I think that, you know, if this is something, if the consensus of the group is that this is something that we want staff to take a look at and discuss and consider, I see no reason not to. But I think if we can move this along, because I think we're not going to resolve this now, and we're waiting for Becky to come on in any event, that we can agree, unless someone has another suggestion, that we would ask staff to take a look at this and then come back to us and we discuss it at some length. And then I think we would have to consult with Becky, because it sounds very tricky. Yes.
Before we go through that process, when we discuss with them, we want something in writing from the staff, but before we discuss it.
Yes. Is there any disagreement to that suggestion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Commissioner Payne.
Yes.
I agree with you and Commissioner Patel and Commissioner Sweezy. Let's have the staff look at this and put it on our agenda at a future date with something in writing in advance, and then we can have a nice conversation about it at a future meeting. So I agree with that. Thank you.
Okay. Do we need a motion to that effect, or?
I don't think so, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, we'll be more than happy to prepare.
Okay.
We're more than happy to prepare.
Okay. No motion. We can do that.
No motion required.
Okay. No motion required. Are there any other matters? Really, Becky, are there any other of your people there at Milliman that need to talk to us before you go on, or?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm just going to provide you with a brief update of the on the actuarial side, unless there are any further questions for Laura regarding the administration.
No, thank you very much, by the way, Laura. That was very helpful and very clear and concise, so thank you.
Great, thank you very much.
Yeah.
John Myrtle, would you please give me the ability to share, and then I'll just provide you with a brief update. All right.
I sent it over. Yep, there you go.
Yeah, okay, super. Can you all see this?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes. Okay,
yes.
Super. So John asked us to just give you a brief update of where things stand on the actuarial front. We have completed the GASB reports for your fiscal year ending December 31st, 2020. That's the information that gets included in your annual financial report. There are two separate reports that we provide, one for the pension plan and one for the OPEB plan, and those are now done. And so if there's any other information your auditors need for preparing your audit, we're ready to help them. As Laura mentioned, we've already received the census data for the January 2021 pension valuation, and that's quick to say. And it was quick for Laura and her group to get it to us, but I'm not sure that anyone beyond the MDC staff appreciates what a huge deal that is. That is, no MDC staff needed to spend any time putting together the census data for us to do the valuation. And I think it's safe to say that it was a big job for staff each year to put that data together for us so we can do the valuation. And now it happens at the push of a button, and it's just marvelous. So we have the data. We are getting, we're working through analyzing what happened during 2020 so that we can then update our calculations of liability and the funded status of the plan, and then turn that into a recommendation for you of a contribution to make in fiscal 2022. On the OPEB side, this is an off year. We do valuations for you for the OPEB plan only every other year. So we won't be doing a January 2021 OPEB valuation for you. I wanted to provide you with some highlights of what the December 31, 2020 GASB numbers looked like. For both plans, we're using an interest rate of 6.875%. Now, when we get to the January 2021 valuation, we'll talk with you about the interest rate that we use for the funding calculations going forward. But for the GASB reports, we look back to the interest rates that we use for the January 2020 valuations, which was 6.875. On that basis,
other than this page, you go further with more pages. And are you happy with the 6.875 at this time? Do you believe that's a good number?
You
give a recommendation.
I think, yeah. Let me just pull up just really quickly on the side. I will pull up. One of the things we include in our GASB reports is an updated analysis of what we expect your investments to earn long term. And that number for the pension plan was 6.12%. So we still have a fair bit of downward movement we need to take on the interest rate assumption.
And at what point of the year do you come in and discuss that with us?
So we do that as part of the funding valuations. Yes. So that's in progress right now. We've got a couple more months to go before we're ready to present those results to you. And we'll show you what the results look like at 6.875 and also some somewhat lower numbers. As we've done in the past, Commissioner, we'll have a chat about the interest rate assumption, how lowering the interest rate assumption impacts the contribution, and we'll make some decisions and then issue our report on that basis. So that is, you know, in the coming attractions area, we will be talking with you more about that in a few months.
Becky, for the new members on the on PPNI, can you very quickly cover, we had a discussion back a while ago with regards to the interest rate, and that 6.875 reflects an adjustment that we made from the original, what was it, 7%?
We've been having a lot of discussions over a lot of years now about the interest rate.
But we made that an adjustment to the 6.875. And you, if you could just briefly discuss for the new folks just what that entails and what it means in terms of the contribution rate that we have to make from our revenues with regard to contributions to the pension plan so that we don't have a substantial deficit.
Sure. The interest rate assumption is used to translate the future benefits that we expect will be paid from the plan over the coming decades into today's dollars. What is the value today of the benefits that will be paid in future decades? And to set that interest rate, we look at the expected long-term earnings that the pension plan investments will throw off. Now, of course, we don't know what the plan will earn this year or next year or the year after, but based on the current asset allocation and current expert thinking about future returns, we can paint a picture of what we expect the investments will earn long term. And basically, if we expect the investments will earn more in the future, then the MDC can contribute less to the pension plan to pay for those benefits. But if investment income will generate less going forward, then the MDC will need to contribute more, because the benefits are the benefits. Benefits are paid either through MDC contributions or investment income. So as investment income goes down, MDC contributions go up. Over the past 20 years or so, expert thinking about long-term investment returns has been dropping. And so we've been engaged in sort of an ongoing discussion, I'd say for probably the past 5 or 6 or 8 years, about reducing the interest rate assumption to match what expert thinking is telling us about future investment returns. And to a certain extent, we've just been chasing a number as expert thinking has been getting more and more gloomy. So too has the interest rate assumption been coming down. Our most recent analysis, as I mentioned, indicated a long-term return of 6.12. So you can see that we've got a bit of a gap between what we're currently assuming and what expert thinking tells us. Now, that's very common. One of the things I do for Milliman is publish our annual public pension funding study that looks at the 100 largest U.S. public pension plans. And the gap for that group is pretty consistent with the gap we see with your plan. So we'll almost certainly need to continue to reduce the interest rate. Every time we reduce it, it increases the MDC's contribution. So we have a thoughtful conversation each year, it seems, to think through where the interest rate needs to be, what is possible to do within the MDC's financial picture, and we come to conclusions each year about where to set the interest rate. So we'll go through that in a couple of months as well. We'll show you what the contribution would look like if we stayed at 6.875. We'll show you 6.75. Maybe we'll show you 6.5. I'm hoping that, you know, you had nice, strong investment returns in 2020, which was marvelous. So that will have improved the assets more than expected, and might make it a little bit easier to, therefore, be able to afford perhaps a little bit more of a drop in the interest rate. But we'll take a look at the numbers. We'll show them to you. We'll talk it through and figure out what's going to be the best course of action.
Okay. Thanks, Becky.
Right. So at December 31st, 2020, here's where we saw the plan. Total pension liability, that's the accounting term. When we're talking about it in the context of the funding valuation, we call it the accrued liability. Those two terms are synonymous. We use an estimate for your December 31st, 2020 GASB report, because you need those numbers before we've done the January 2021 valuation. So this total pension liability of $310 million is projected from a precise measurement at January 2020. But the plan fiduciary net position, that's the accounting term normal people normally talk about the market value of the plan's assets. And that is the actual number on December 31st. You had $253.3 million of plan assets. The difference between them for GASB purposes is called the net pension liability. Again, in a funding context, we'd call it the unfunded accrued liability. It's $57.3 million, which gives you a funded ratio of 81.5%. Now, I do want to say there is one difference, one substantial difference, that these numbers versus when we're talking about in a funding context. For funding purposes, we don't want your contribution to bounce about a lot just because the market bounces around a lot. So as you know, we use an asset smoothing technique to calculate this amount on paper called the actuarial value of assets. And it's that actuarial value that we compare to the liability and that we use to calculate the funded ratio for purposes of the funding valuation. So if anyone ever asks you how well funded the plan is, your answer is, well, it depends. Are you talking in a GASB context? where we use the market value of assets, or in a funding context, where we use the smoothed actuarial value of assets. So these are GASB numbers, so it's market value. The rate of return for 2020 was a lovely, strong 15.4%, and I imagine that your investments have continued to perform strong January through April of this year. It's just been a very, very nice time for investment returns, and it's a nice relief, isn't it, to talk about a good year.
We're over 10% for the year so far from
12/31. That's wonderful, Commissioner. That's great. That's great. Mm-hmm. Right. We went through the same exercise for the OPEB plan. Now, here we have a significant difference from past years because you have set up your OPEB trust and have committed to a plan, a long-range plan for funding the OPEB benefits by setting aside money in the OPEB trust. That allows us to use an interest rate assumption of 6.875, just like with the pension plan, to reflect that long-term you expect investment income to help pay for long-term OPEB benefits. Previous to this fiscal year end, you were not setting aside money in any systematic way for pre-funding OPEB benefits. And so the GASB rules directed us to use a very low interest rate assumption that reflected current yield rates on municipal bonds, which were at December 31st, 2020, down mired in the sub 3% level. So a much, much higher interest rate means much lower liabilities than we had disclosed in previous financial reports, reflecting that now you're on the path to pre-funding these benefits. So on the basis of a 6.875% discount rate, we had a liability of $182.3 million. Now, you don't have a lot of assets yet. Still, $9.1 million is getting you started. You have money both in the OPEB trust gradually being invested. You also have money that you keep at the MDC out of which you pay benefits. Both of them together are considered OPEB assets. So it's both, Yelena, I don't remember the exact number. I want to say $600,000 or $800,000 that has been set aside and invested in long-term securities, and the balance is sort of a short-term fund with the MDC for paying benefits. So the unfunded, the net amount, the unfunded amount is $173 million, which puts you at 5% funded. And you started at zero. In the fullness of time, you'll be at 100. Baby steps. You're starting the process. You're at 5% funded now. No one was funding their OPEB benefits prior to about 2006. We now have clients that are 80 or 90 or 100% funded on their OPEB benefits. Just start, and gradually the trust will get filled up.
But the most important thing you've done, our staff has done, is to get that interest rate last year from minus, you know, from under the 3% on the bonding up to the 6.87, which made a huge amount in the difference in contributions we had to make.
So exactly.
That was Scott led that, and along with you and, you know, your staff, but that's a major, major accomplishment that was done in the past 12 months.
Absolutely. You too.
If I may, Becky, Scott Charleston, I would, through the chairman, this is always a hot topic every year, and I'm sure it'll be hot this year. So we have last year, the budget cycle, we had accepted and the board approved a 10-year payback plan. And I am sure then when Becky does her calculation to determine what we owe this coming year, which probably will be different, correct me if I'm wrong, Becky, from the projection from last year. It's going to be something different, whatever that is. But it will be a hot topic, and it is definitely a topic that needs lots of investment and PPI and Board of Finance because we've talked a lot about this, and this is a really, really important issue.
Can you explain again OPEC, the difference between OPEC and regular?
The difference between OPEB and, I'm sorry?
Yeah.
OPEB and the regular pension.
The regular pension.
Very, very similar mechanisms, but different benefits. The pension pays a monthly amount based on a member's pay and years of service with the MDC. OPEB is retiree medical and dental and life insurance benefits that the MDC pays to retirees who meet certain requirements. So it's retiree, it's OPEB stands for other post-employment benefits, and the other means other than pension. So medical, dental, life insurance benefits. In some cases, they're paid just to the retiree. Some benefits are provided to the retiree and spouse or dependents. There is some premium sharing, so the retiree pays some amounts, the MDC pays some amounts. That's all encompassed under the term OPEB.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, historically yes. We used to pay from our regular budget, and now we are trying to set up the system so automatically we can estimate what our liabilities are. Am I correct?
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just to clarify, we will be paying as you go for a long time. So there's two right now. Up until last year, we were paying as you go, and that's about $10 million a year of OPEB liabilities, cash out the door. It's pay year to year. So $10 million is budgeted in our budget, and by the end of the year, it's gone. This account is to start to collect a savings account equal to our liability on an annual basis, and so that is the goal of this savings plan. But we will not. I don't want to give anyone the impression that this is the account that will be used to pay those benefits this year, next year, or the year after. It'll be a long time, Becky. If you could explain before we can start using this account.
What you're doing now, on top of what you've always been doing, which is paying benefits, is now you're setting aside funds while someone is working for you so that when they retire, you've already set aside all the money that's needed to pay for their benefits. So you are catching up in the meantime. You haven't set aside any money for the people who are working for you now. You've only paid for people once they retire. So now you're going to start setting aside money while someone's working for you. And Scott, I think the savings account is a good metaphor to use. So we're building up the amounts that will be used in future years to pay the benefits.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, have we set up the percentage that normally we used to spend 10 million and we will continue spending 10 or whatever it is, plus we spend 10% or 5% to put into this account?
Yes, we do all of those calculations. It is a very sophisticated mathematical set of calculations based not only on the characteristics of the people that are already retired and collecting benefits, but also reflecting all of the active workforce, when we expect they will retire, how much we expect the benefits will cost once they're retired. So all of that goes into our analysis.
And that then tells the administration how much money we have to set aside for this purpose. Am I correct?
Right, right. And we've set up a 10-year plan, as Mr. Jellison alluded to gradually get you from no pre-funding at all to fully pre-funding the cost of benefits for future retirees.
And this is our second year, right?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Becky, is there anything else, or are we finished?
That's it for us. It's a pleasure seeing you. We'll look forward to talking with you in depth in a couple of months about the pension valuation results.
But no actuary jokes this afternoon, huh?
You go ahead and make them, Mr. Chairman.
No. I was asking you.
I never joke about actuarial work.
We have infinite respect here for actuaries.
Bless your heart.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Once again, does anyone have any questions for Becky? If not, we can move to item 5, consideration and potential action with regard to employee benefits consultant. We put a proposal out.
We'll sign off. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you,
Laura.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, Chairman Taylor?
Yes.
After reviewing the two companies, Locked In and USI Insurance Services, for the past 20-plus years, staff has always given us a recommendation. The chairman of PP&I has named a subcommittee for this, for the pension advisory, along a number of things that PP&I has the power to pick who they want. In the report, it has Locked In an 8.6 on the technical proposed score versus USI at an 8.3. But I also, you go further down, they're both equal in the next. I would like to see the same way as we've always done. The chairman name a subcommittee to interview these two companies, as we've done in the past. We've interviewed Locked In. I've been on the committee at least two times over the last 10, 12 years. And the committee come back with a recommendation to PP&I along with the report that we got from our staff and then make a decision at a later date on which company we're going to accept.
Any comments? Concerns?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Penn. I'm a little confused. Why wouldn't we follow our procedure that we always follow?
Well, I mean, there's no reason for us not to. I think this is really a reflection of the fact that we had a year off for COVID, because this would have been done last year, and this was all just a general adjustment. I have no objection.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Johnson. If I could clarify, I have no problem with Mr. Commissioner Sweezy's recommendation, but I just want to clarify, Kelly, can you explain, we have followed the process and procedure we have followed for the last three times. Kelly, can you elaborate on that?
Sure. So as in any best value selection, when we go out on a best value basis for an RFP, we go out and we have staff. We assign three staff on the selection evaluation panel who then makes a recommendation to the source selection authority. The panel can do interviews or the panel can decide to pass forward their recommendation, and then the source selection authority, who in this case is the PP&I committee, can then decide to do their own due diligence, have interviews, and just as you described, Commissioner Sweezy. I had spoken with Commissioner Taylor a couple weeks ago, and we decided to bring forth the information that we provided for you all to see, the PP&I committee, and it's totally up to you to be able to make a decision to accept the recommendation of staff or to have those interviews. So this
Kelly, what's your recommendation? I'm reading this whole thing. What's your recommendation?
USI.
The staff recommended.
They're recommending USI, if I understand.
I don't understand that, because Lockton gets a higher mark in technical proposed rating. They get the equal. Is it all because of money? In the past, you have brought these firms to us. You have not given us the financial side. That part you give us after we've done the interviews. We've never done it this way before, and that I remember anyway.
Yep.
At least for these companies, for this position. I still think PP&I, to make a sound decision, should also have, as in the past, we've had four commissioners plus Chairman DiBella do a interview, an hour apiece, and or whatever it takes. And then we can make a much more, we can answer questions to other commissioners on PP&I before we make that decision.
Through you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think we should follow what Mr. Sweezy is recommending and what we have been doing for years. Staff can evaluate, make the recommendation, but not form selection. After the interview by the committee, committee can make the determination and recommendation. Thank you.
All right.
I would like to just reiterate, it's important for us to understand that staff did exactly what they have done in the past. I have no problem with PP&I holding their own interviews, but staff did exactly what they have done in the past. I just want that to be clear. If the board of PPI decides to interview and not take the recommendation from staff, then it's absolutely fine. But the fact that the staff did something different this time than they've done in the past is not correct.
Kelly, have you given us the dollar amounts in the past before we have reviewed different companies?
No.
No, you have not. So everything else is the same, Scott. We have never been given the dollar amount before we've done interviews. That's with the Hobbs, with Lockton, and so on and so forth.
Kelly, yep. Had a conversation with the chairman. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yep, we did. We put together, so in a best value evaluation, you always use price as the trade-off to determine that best value. And so the evaluation summary has always included a review of the price and made that best value based on a trade-off for technical and to the staff's evaluation panel's review. And, an 8.3 versus an 8.6 still gives the exact same rating. It's within that range. So they both were rated highly technically. They both were rated the highest in past performance based on their proposals, and therefore it came down to price for the staff to say, based on the difference in pricing and the fact that they both received identical ratings except for the numerical is very slight, that the trade-off is the best value recommended to the committee. To the source selection authority is that USI presents the best value to the MDC. But again, in accordance with the terms that are right there in the RFP, and it's published to everyone, that the source selection authority does their own due diligence, can have those interviews, and make their selection. And the beauty of best value is you're not required to make a low bid selection like you are in most bids or a technically acceptable situation. In the past, we may have done I don't recall us ever not doing this in a best value situation since I've been here, and this is my second renewal. So.
Who are you, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Basically, what she described is selecting somebody when both are equal in technical aspect and experience. We are going for what we call bottom line. And bottom line is you are using best value. The best value word maybe confuses everybody, that you can put everything else into and not be real numbers. And what you are not saying or not sharing, the real numbers with the committee. That's what Mr. Ray is mentioning. Am I correct?
Well, I think in the past, we've looked at people, we've interviewed them, I think we've rated them. We've never known what the contract price is. That's been in a separate envelope that we've never seen. Am I not correct, Ray? Am I misspeaking there in terms
You're
of
correct,
our procedures
Al.
And past?
You're correct.
Yeah, we never saw the actual contract price when PP&I was interviewing.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, Chris, yeah. Mr. Counsel, there have been times in the past, and they probably predate 2012, and the reason that date's important is we passed in 2012 the ordinance that Kelly's referring to, the best value procurement provision, and that was part of our we did that pursuant to enabling legislation for the legislature where we could bypass the standard rules of any contract over $25,000 has to go out to public bid, and you accept the lowest responsible bidder. We created exceptions by adopting certain FAR's federal acquisition regulations provisions, one of them being the best value. Scott's absolutely right. The staff in this case that he assigned to go through a process, follow the process as set forth in General Ordinances 3A, or B8, I believe. They followed those to the T. One of the criteria, and it happens to be that, as Kelly points out, if necessary, the tie-breaking criteria is price. These two companies were so close in terms of their qualities that price became the differential. Scott assigned, when he created the committee of staff, he assigned PPI, designated PPI, as is his authority to do so, as being the sole source selector on this procurement. You have a job to do now. Your job is to select based upon not just staff's recommendation, but if you feel that it's necessary for you to do interviews for whatever reason, because, again, you're going to select, then going through the process that you've suggested is fine. So it's not, is it staff's way or your way, for example. It's they've done their job pursuant to the ordinance. You have the right to ask for a committee to be set up to conduct interviews to make sure that whoever you select because that's the most qualified, and then and the entity that you want to perform these tasks. So we're still working through, by the way, FARs, mm-hmm. and so it's a learning experience, quite frankly. But that's what the ordinance provides now, and there are other ordinances or procurement ordinances which we've adopted pursuant to the FARs that go beyond or take us out of the regular lowest bid, lowest responsible bid award. This is one of them. So what you're suggesting is perfectly fine.
Well, I would suggest that we put together a subcommittee. Ray, would you be willing to chair that committee?
Be happy to.
Okay. I would want Dom. Maureen and
Commissioner Taylor.
Okay. Is there anyone else who wants to serve?
I'm willing to serve.
Okay. Well, why don't I step off and
Is Commissioner Patel a member of PP&I?
Yes.
Yes, he is. Unfortunately, his name was dropped off this agenda.
That's why. Because I'm looking at the list of commissioners, and I kept wondering. Okay, let me be very clear here. I mean, I think that I view myself as having a conflict here, just because of my orientation. And for that reason, just so that this process is not muddied up, when I say that I have a conflict, we've worked very closely with Lockton. We've got several initiatives that are in place right now. And this whole COVID thing sort of knocked those out. So I think I would prefer that I not be involved, so that essentially this can be considered by a subcommittee in a reasonable, neutral fashion. So, Sweezy will
chair Commissioner the Curry still on, Al?
I don't know.
Is he still on, Joe?
Commissioner Curry, yes. Are you on?
Yes, he is.
Okay, would you be willing, sir, to...
Would you be willing to serve on the committee, if he would, could we add him? I think he brings a lot of...
Don Curry, I have no objection.
Okay.
So there would
if
be yourself,
yeah.
Dom, Mr. Patel, and Commissioner Curry. Is there anyone else?
And I have no... You said Maureen before. She's been
yeah,
on
Maureen,
before.
Yeah,
if she wants. I mean, I don't care.
Well, I don't know if she's available.
Happy to have her.
Are you
she's
available,
Maureen? She's given a thumbs up.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
I'm more available than I used to be.
Okay. Thank
okay.
you.
And what I can do, is send all of the committee copies of both proposals.
Okay.
We'll just have to send you a non-disclosure form for you to fill out, and then we will. Send you hard copies of the proposals if you prefer, or we can send them electronically. We can work that out through John.
Okay. All right, so then we have this item five under control then.
Yes.
The subcommittee will meet, evaluate the proposals in conjunction with staff, and then they will make their recommendation, all right, or their selection. That being the case, we move to six.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
May I
Chairman,
propose?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. This is Commissioner Payne. I have a question.
Yes. Someone had a question?
I did, but District Council.
Go ahead, Dom.
Go right ahead if you want.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Payne. Chris Stone, District Council. Just the subcommittee will meet, will make a recommendation, come back to PPI.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, Dom.
All right,
thank
Dom.
You. I have a concern. I'm wondering our district council on the agenda for his contract renewal. I believe his contract is up, and I'm wondering if correct this agenda. I think it's very important for our district council to have a contract in place. We have so many legal matters on our plate coming up forward, and frankly, I'm not sure why it's elapsed.
Okay. Well, I can respond to that. That will be handled at the next board meeting. In other words, it will be on the agenda, and as a consequence, the matter will be referred back to us. PPI so that we can deal with it and then get it back to the board for final approval. So, all right.
Could I ask? It's right
yeah.
easy.
Sure.
Could I ask why in the past when we interviewed Chris Stone approximately, I don't know, 14, 15 months ago, it came mm-hmm. to PPI first and then of course we go back to the full board.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean...
Why does it have to be referred to the board, to us, to... I believe that's the way it's been done. I could be wrong. But I thought
yeah,
it would
but
come... Why is there a referral? Because I would hope we're going to give Chris the same contract that we gave Bart, a five-year contract. Maybe he's been in a year, so we'd give him four more, but... I have no problem with the procedure. I would recommend that unless someone has a problem on PPI with Chris's contract, the full board just brings it up at the next meeting, and we have a resolution and move forward.
Well, I
don't know why it's got to come from the board back to PPI, and then PPI goes back to the board, mm-hmm. and it could take 2-3 months. Like Dominic said, this thing is already a couple months over. I believe there's a legal subcommittee. Unless somebody has objection, to Chris Stone. Don't get me wrong. If there's objections, then I think there's got to be discussion. But if there's no objection,
well, I think there are some issues. There are no issues with regard to whether or not he's going to get a contract.
Okay.